Welcome to the 2-4. Coming at you quickly after the last one because we felt we had something to make up for. Zach Vanoss here, Sean O'Neill on the other end, sounding sexier than ever. How are you today?
I'm very well,
nice. Listen to that. Listen to that.
Listen to that.
Oh, that's pro. That's pro podcasting.
Yeah, no more of this dog and pony crap. This is the real stuff.
Taking it.
I'm good. Nice win over the Sens last night.
Hey, that one felt nice.
Yeah, weird start, but
no kidding.
Pretty dominant win, actually, all things considered.
Yep, it was the score was close anyways until the end there, but Montreal looked the much better team throughout that game. For me, the Senators don't intimidate me as much without McLean over there anymore. I feel like he was the one who had Terrier's number. Now they're just the Senators. They're just another team again.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that last episode, but I know the team's kind of treading water a little bit, but I was still surprised that they let him go because I think he's a really good coach, and I don't think he's going to be unemployed for long because I think the consensus around the league is that he's a pretty damn good coach. And maybe he got a little lucky that Jack Adams season with some unsustainable goaltending, but I still think he can get the job done. And I think, I would not be surprised if it's one of those situations where if there's an opening between now and the end of the year where he gets the job.
I'd hire him. I think he's a good coach. Apparently he lost the locker room. You probably know better. You're in Ottawa. What are the rumors around the firing?
I haven't paid super close attention to it, but I guess that is sort of the consensus, is that he'd either lost the locker room and or had lost the faith of Ottawa's increasingly schizophrenic management. So, and those things do happen. Even good coaches can lose the locker room, and that's something that's hard to get back once you have lost it. And we're not in the locker room; we don't know what's going on. But again, I still think he pretty much squeezed every ounce of talent from that roster. And I think whoever signs him next is going to be getting a pretty decent coach.
Would agree. Before we get into the podcast too deeply, we've got to mention RabbitHabs.com. Want to get to them off the start in this episode. RabbitHabs.com pretty much supplies you with all the news and information about the Canadians that you need. Not de long. That means in two languages. For those of you out there who only speak one, don't want to get things too confusing. RabbitHabs.com. Check it out. Since we last cast, the Habs lost one at home to the Ducks by a 2-1 score. And they beat the Sens, as we just alluded to, 4-1 at the Bell Center Saturday night. Fun Saturday night win. Alex Galchenyuk with another goal in that one, which kind of leads us into the 12-pack here. The lines, a full dance card for Michel Therrien on Saturday night. So what did he do? I think something that surprised a lot of us. Certainly went against my prediction. He moved David Dale to the wing. So question number one for you, Sean, will DD find success as a winger?
I kind of like it in the sense that, as we talked about last week, he's our most expendable center. But I always look at him almost purely as a center.
Yeah.
And maybe that's me, slotting certain skill sets too rigidly into certain positions, but the guy's a playmaker. He's not, you know, he's really a pass first guy to a fault. And generally, when I think of those type of offensive players, you don't really put them at the wing. You kind of want to have your snipers at the wing and your playmakers at center. So to me, even though he might be, you know, only the fourth best center on the team, he is a center to me. He's not a winger.
So you're still of the mind one of these guys needs to be traded rather than Dale Knapp play on the wing.
Yes, I would say so.
I would agree with that. And you know, we've also got too many wingers. For Dernay, whose skill set, as you say, doesn't necessarily lend itself to either one of the sides all that well. You know, Bornival's now sitting out. We've got guys in the minors who are somewhat ready. I mean, Andrew Ghetto got the call back up and played again on Saturday night and looked good, actually. I thought that was one of his better games, even though he didn't score or anything like that. He could find success as a winger, I suppose, but he looked fine on Saturday. I don't think I had any complaints about him out there. But as you say, he just seems like a natural center, and anywhere else might hurt him. But you know, Didi continues to prove us wrong just when we have our moments of doubt. So maybe he'll find equal success out there, and then that puts the Habs in a pretty decent position where they add another strong winger to the suit. Really, while Galchenyuk finds himself at center, where he's flourishing right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth a shot. If
yeah, exactly.
Else.
You're not up against it to trade any of these guys at this moment.
No, plus, and the worst, like we said the other day, the worst thing the team can do right now is move Galchenyuk back to the wing. Like,
yeah,
he's entrenched himself in the center position now, and moving him would be ridiculous at this point. So move anyone but Galchenyuk, and I don't think you're going to move Plucky. So I'm okay with trying Dernay at wing, and maybe it works. And you know, maybe like I said, maybe I'm just slotting him into that center role because you think pass first, you think center, and maybe he'll thrive at the wing. But it's worth, if nothing else, it's worth a shot.
And there's always injuries, right? I mean, it doesn't hurt to be stockpiled at center right now. Lars just came back, and you never know what's going to happen. Never know who's going to get the mumps, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ducks were just in town, spreading the mumps. Did you hear they blame the Blues?
I did.
I like that. Yeah.
I'm going to continue to blame the Ducks.
I believe it's the Ducks' fault. I would not fault the Blues. John Hamm's favorite team is not bringing the mumps into the league. Everyone knows that. Question two. Max Pacioretty's taken to hospital on Thursday after a controversial hit. We'll discuss that in a minute as well. But then he plays on Saturday. So what's up with this guy's injuries? Is he Wolverine, as he's been nicknamed? Is he overreact when he's hit, or is it just coincidence that he continues to be taken to hospital, things seem dire, and then he kind of is fine?
It's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy.
I don't know. I don't think it's a matter of him overreacting when he gets hit. I just think he's either, you know, some combination of extremely high pain threshold and extremely rapid healing abilities. Like, I've never, at least as a Habs player, I can't remember seeing another player like this, who's gone through some devastating injuries and come back in kind of record time each time.
Yep.
It's nuts.
Some out there are accusing him of just being a big baby, a big faker who then is a hero when he returns. But I mean, I just don't... It could be possible, but it would be weird to me that they continue to take him to the hospital for these things.
Yeah, it is possible. You hear that, you know, like Ben Roethlisberger is kind of infamous for that in the NFL, of sort of playing up his injuries a little bit. And maybe Pacioretty does the same thing. But like you said, it would be weird that the training staff would play along and ship him to the hospital for precautionary reasons.
Maybe something else is going on. Maybe he is Wolverine. They have to keep sending him to the hospital to inject whatever it is that gives him super healing powers.
He did play at Michigan, didn't he?
Oh, that's a good point.
I think he did.
The Wolverine should probably be his nickname, then.
It really should. That's not a bad nickname.
No. I mean, Max Pack's all right. We tried to make Max Powers happen, but didn't, so apparently we don't have the power to generate nicknames yet. We'll get there. What about the hit?
Yeah, he played for the Wolverines. I think it deserved a penalty.
Yeah.
That part baffled me. I don't necessarily think it was suspension-worthy.
No, and I mean, I agree with the people who say that perhaps he watched the puck a little long on that and put himself in more vulnerable position than necessary.
Yep, I would agree with that too. But I would have given them either a roughing or an interference call on that. I mean, it was
completely.
It was a pretty late hit.
Probably an interference call, almost more than roughing.
Yeah. It's one of those things you could have called them on two or three different things, but yeah.
They went with nothing, but they managed to find some calls on Subban.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about the loss. That's question three. Was it the toughest loss to take this season? Felt like it to me.
Really? I still think the Chicago loss was tougher.
That's fair. Or I guess, yeah,
that
maybe...
That was a bit of a heartbreaker to let that one in with 30 seconds to go.
That was a heartbreaker. I felt, but it almost felt just like, you're like, okay, the Blackhawks are a good team and they beat us. And it was a heartbreaker of a game, and I thought the guys played one of their better performances of the season. So that was tough to lose, but the one to the Ducks felt like, that was one that got away unjustly. Perhaps that was the game I had most trouble. I don't usually like to put anything on the refs. I think fans have a tendency to do that a lot, and most of the time unjustified. I think the Habs may have a case for the fact that it wasn't the most fair and just loss of the season to the Ducks on Thursday.
No, that's fair. And that Ducks team, their record in, I don't have it in front of me, but their record in one goal games this season is just, or even over the last two seasons, is ridiculous.
Yeah. That, which is generally considered unsustainable.
Generally, but yeah, that they're almost getting to the point where you have to wonder if they're doing something legitimate, where they're an outlier, where we can't really apply the laws of statistics that we apply to other teams to them.
Every time we say that about a team, it comes crashing down about four
almost
days
always,
later.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll see what happens with the Ducks. But also the Ducks, dirty bunch of buggers.
They really are. They might be the sneakiest dirty team in the league.
They're very sneaky with the dirtiness, and it's, I think it all starts at Mr. Mumps himself.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
From there on down, got some delicious coffee this morning.
I suppose it's a little early for a drink, isn't it?
Actually, I've already had alcohol this morning.
Very nice.
Had some mimosas as I was celebrating Christmas here, doing Christmas early in Toronto, so that I can return to La Belle Province and do it all again.
Sounds like a good plan. Brings us to number four. Are the Flames not, quote-unquote, competing as hard now?
It must not be. They're losing. Guess, you know, everyone said Flames amongst the tops in the West because they compete harder, working harder than everyone else. Now here they've lost seven in a row, I believe.
Yeah, they might even be up to eight at this point.
We can only point to, yeah, I think it is eight because they lost to Canucks on Saturday night in overtime. Well, we have to point to the fact that they're not trying. That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, I mean, I know we all roll our eyes anytime anyone mentions effort and compete level and stuff, but when you watch that team, I mean, they hardly did.
Hardly had them playing well, but it was bound to, at some point, regression was inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who points to those type of things as an antidote to, you know, to basic math, I would sort of scoff at that. But hardly did have them playing well, and he had them playing hard and playing above their head. But like you said, we could have seen this coming from miles away. This is what regression to the mean looks like in real time.
Yep. And they fell fat. Well, I mean, eight losses will do that to you. But
yeah.
From tops to now, they're out of the playoffs, and I don't expect them to reemerge. I mean,
I can't see how they do. You know, they were getting some good goaltending. They've got a decent blue line, but that's not a very talented team.
No, it's not.
And maybe they're further along in their rebuilding process than we thought they were a little bit, but there's still a ways to go. And honestly, missing the playoffs is probably a good thing for them.
Any comments from Mr. Feaster on this? During this little... It's like he spoke and suddenly they fell apart.
Basically the story of the franchise.
No, they were bad before.
Yeah, they were.
What about Hartley's extension? Are they worried about that now? I mean, we both said we thought he hadn't playing well.
I mean, by and large, I don't think those extensions mean a whole lot. Maybe for some of the really, you know, lower income level teams in the league, if they tie themselves up, they regret it. But, you know, Calgary's making enough money. They're a profitable enough franchise where if the bottom falls out, they're going to buy Hartley out regardless of how many years he has left on that extension or not. And that being said, I think he's a good coach, and I think he's earned it.
Yeah, but as we were just saying, the issue is not necessarily always about who's a good coach and who isn't a good coach. But sometimes you lose the team, and you can never predict for that. But coaching contracts are pretty much symbolic.
Yeah, I mean, how often does a coach actually coach to the end of his contract?
Only Babcock.
It's almost, right?
Well, you rarely hear of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the only way it happens is if there's question marks to begin with, and then they kind of let it fade away and go a different direction. But that's rare. That's very rare. Coaches are generally fired, not just not brought back.
Yeah. Yeah. So anytime I read about a coach getting an extension, I kind of, you know, nice for him. That's great. But you're not penciling that guy in for 4 years just because he signed a 4-year extension.
What do coaches make? I'm hearing $2 million for Babcock. Does that mean like a guy like Terrier is pulling in one?
I'd have to double check. I was under the impression it was significantly higher than that.
More than that?
I thought so. I mean, it's not Jim Harbaugh to Michigan money, but I thought it was more than that.
Just putting it out there. I don't have an answer.
Jim Harbaugh, 6 years, $48 million. That's a college team.
Yeah, which is one of the highest paid positions. You can, as a coach, you can make... I'm looking it up right now. NHL coaching salary. This is exciting podcasting. I'm glad we've got two mics now. So that the quality of the sound is up, the quality of the content's pretty shit. I don't know. It doesn't say.
Well, one step.
Well, average salary time, between right? 800,000 and 2 million a year.
It's a relatively broad range,
that's,
but okay.
That's a big range for average. I'm not sure whoever answered that question knows what average means. All right, on to number 5. Your thoughts on the thank you Saku ceremony. Nice ceremony.
That's your thoughts?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, mine too. They did a good job. And yeah, I mean, you knew they would. I have a hard time remembering the last time the Habs kind of fucked something up like this.
It was tough to fall. I mean, tough to have it happen the week after the Beliveau ceremony. Because you're falling into a space there where you can't go. You kind of got to watch yourself.
Yeah.
I thought they might do something more for him, though, than give him a horribly ugly painting.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is the last Saku Koivu night.
Well, I assume not. Because like we've talked about retiring his number before, and you're for it, and I'm against it in the lightest term of against. But I really think they can put him in that, whatever it's called, the Ring of Honor or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of thought they might be unveiling that on Thursday night. Didn't turn out to be the case. So we'll probably see more Koivu nights. Get to continue to cheer him on. It was nice, though. I really enjoyed the fact that the fans still have a lot of love for Saku, even though as we've come into another more successful period in the Canadiens' history, he's pretty much the only bright spot in the darkest part of the Habs' history.
Yeah,
and
he
instead of blaming him for that, he's almost seen as the hero for being the bright spot.
Yeah.
Because it would be easy for us to go, Saku Koivu, captain of the worst chapter of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
And kind of put that on him as if it's his fault, but they don't. And I like that.
I still remember watching his first game back, and I was pretty sure he was going to get a good ovation, but part of me was still worried that a third of the crowd would boo him for some stupid reason.
That would have been pretty harsh.
That would have been ridiculous, but whatever lingering mini anti-Saku sentiment that existed in amongst, you know, certain segments of the Habs fan population for a period, that's completely dissipated.
Yep.
Which is nice to see. I mean, he really was, you know, the good soldier for a decade there.
And another thing, a big part of the problem, of course, with the booing and not liking Saku was the fact that he never learned French. But I watched a little bit of that documentary that RDS played beforehand, and gotta say, the fact that anyone can speak Finnish is enough of an impressive feat in itself. What a ridiculous language, and apparently one of the hardest to learn on the face of the earth.
Yep.
Which is why all Finns know English, because they know no one's ever going to learn Finnish.
Yeah, fair enough.
The man had two languages. I don't plan on. Leave him alone. Subban can learn French. It'll be a second one.
He's getting there, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, he is. I think he's taking lessons, actually. Before we jump ahead,
yes,
I want to get back to my comment about how ugly these paintings are. Why are the ceremony paintings always hideous?
Yeah, they're not great.
They're never good. Are they rushed? Is it a contest? Does a child win? I mean, look, I couldn't do anything. I'll admit that my artistic skills are minimal to none. But you would think with all the money and the the high-profile situation that it is. And this isn't, I'm not just talking about the Koivu painting, and I really hope whoever painted it isn't a big fan of this podcast, because I'm very sorry. And you can make up for it by sending Sean and I a painting of ourselves podcasting. Wouldn't that be nice? When we retire from this podcast, I want a painting. Somebody needs to get on that. But they're never, maybe it's hard to make those paintings nice. The style of, I don't know what it is.
I don't know. They do some weird stuff. Like when Jeter was doing his retirement tour, like some of the stuff he got was kind of cool. And I still don't really know why every team felt the need to give him something.
Was he a fucking president?
but some of the crap these teams churn out is kind of bizarre. And like you said, it's not like this was a rut. Like they knew this was coming.
Yeah, so somebody had time to paint.
Yeah, I know.
Ugly paintings. What are you going to do? hit me with the sixth spot.
Number six, has the East closed the gap on the West?
I think so. I think the East is significantly better than it was last year. I think the teams, at least the top six teams in playoff picture right now in the East, could be competing for a spot in the West. And last year, I don't know that you could have said that of all but what, maybe one or two of the teams in the East?
Yeah.
I think the gap is closed. I mean, don't get me wrong. I continue to believe that the West is better and significantly so. But Pittsburgh, Islanders, Montreal, Tampa Bay, Detroit, those top five would at least all be competing for a spot in the playoffs in the West, no doubt.
Yep. The West, I think, is still a stronger conference top to bottom. But last year, the disparity was the biggest we've seen it in quite some time.
Yeah.
And it's been bad it's been really almost since I've started watching hockey, the West has been better than the East.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As a whole. And we usually tend to think these things are cyclical, but it's been almost... We're closing in on two decades of the West almost consistently being the stronger conference, which is kind of bizarre. But the East, yeah, it's not like last year or even the year before. Like you said, the best teams in the East, I think, are, you know, at least legitimate playoff teams in the West.
It's not the problem that the NBA has, which is actually hurting their product at this point. The NBA feels the West is so much better in the NBA that they're thinking of moving up Western start times because they lose half the country to all the good games. Toronto Raptors, as much as it's fun to see what they're doing living in Toronto and kind of jumping on the NBA train a little, the fact is they're first in the East and having no problem there. Oh, yeah, they're dominant in the East. And, wow. I mean, the West is, you look at the playoff matchups in the West right now, or potential playoff matchups, rather, and you're like, Jesus, any of these teams could win the whole thing. Whereas the Raptors, first, but I don't know, not to get too much into basketball, but my point is the NHL doesn't have that problem. I mean, whoever emerges from the East could legitimately win the Stanley Cup. I'll probably pick the Western team, most likely, to beat them, because as I say, the West is still better, but it wouldn't be a shocker if somebody from the East won the Cup.
No, it wouldn't. Is there anyone in the East that can... I mean, the Cup's one thing because it's a seven-game series, but... Mm-hmm. Is there anyone in the East you put up there with, you know, let's say Chicago, Anaheim, St. Louis? I'd add San Jose to that mix. L.A., even though L.A. has kind of been, you know, average by their standards this year.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't have Pittsburgh. I don't have the Islanders. I don't have Montreal. I don't have Tampa Bay up there, so no.
No, I would agree. Pittsburgh's obviously the closest, but yeah, you know, there's still something just a little off with that team.
It's also a different brand.
Fleury's been good, though.
Fleury has been good. Fleury's been very good, and I'm one who really seemed to enjoy knocking Fleury when I could. But he's actually had an impressive season. So, and I don't think it's, you know, obviously part of it's a good team, but I don't think he's completely being buoyed by what the Penguins do.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I see all of those teams being ahead of Winnipeg if they were to switch over to the West, who are in seventh right now.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And beat the Bruins the other night. That was a fun game to watch. Every week, Bruins get closer and closer. Or by that, I mean closer to missing the playoffs.
Yeah, they got to turn it around relatively soon, you'd think. We keep waiting for it, but yeah, it's getting to that point in the season where you got to do it.
We'll get to the Bruins in a little bit. Back to the Habs, question seven. Bigger impact on the Canadiens this season, Parenteau or Sekhatch?
They've both been, you know, pretty nice little additions.
Yep. They've both been improvements.
Yeah, exactly. And you could make the argument that over the balance of the season, I guess it's been Parenteau because he kind of came out, you know, hit the ground running, whereas Seacatch it took 8 or 10 games. But I've really been impressed by Yuri Seacatch as of late.
Me too.
The way he's going to the net, his, you know, his nose for the puck, he's strong, he's a really good skater, decent stick handler. Like, I like this guy. There's something there, and he's only 22 years old.
Yeah, he's young. Parenteau's. Yeah.
I've been very, very impressed by him. Like, he's, you know, you're taking a risk on a guy like this, even though he was highly regarded, even though, you know, a couple teams had, had thrown their names in the mix there. You never really know how a guy's going to translate from, you know, from the Czech Elite League to the NHL, even though he did play well in the Olympics. There's definitely a chance that he could have come in and just bombed out.
Yep. Especially with his talents, right? Because he's he's a good skater and, as you say, a solid stick handler. So coming from the much bigger ice, you could see how that might jam up once he gets into the NHL. If it's a little bit faster and the ice is a little less room to work, it would make a lot of sense if his skills didn't necessarily translate on this side.
Yep, absolutely. But, you know, I think it's still early in his career. I guess anything could happen, but I think, you know, he's shown that he's a legitimate NHL caliber forward.
Oh, no doubt. And an impressive, like, I'm excited when he's got the puck on his stick now.
Yeah.
He's really, he might be the best at zone entries on the whole team. I mean, he's really good at taking it through traffic. I think Subban's obviously better. But, Subban's fun to watch when he gets going sometimes. He did it a couple times against the Ducks the other night, and it was just like, oh, yeah. When you do that, PK, because PK's having a quiet season, if nothing else. I don't think he's having a rough season, but it's quiet, and I think he's looking to be more responsible in his own end, which means the sparkles that the sparkles, weird thing to say, the sparks of, like, just those awesome Subban moments have been fewer this season, but it's always fun when he pulls them out and you just watch him skate around that guy, circle back.
Yeah,
he can really take over the game. And he did, actually, even in the start of the game against Ottawa, when Montreal really came on strong until that weird fluky goal, one of the strangest that Price has led in a long time, Montreal was just taking it to the Sens in the early going.
Yep.
And it was pretty much Subban led. But Seacatch was getting in on that as well. I mean, when those two are just, they find their way when you think, going to turn the puck over here. Nope, they'll skate away with it. And I think there's a big difference on a team if you got guys who can skate through traffic like that and create situations. Especially, I know the power play is not really still hasn't clicked for Montreal, and may not through the season because it seems to be a real problem point for them. But there was a couple power plays there in the last week or so when you've seen Seacatch get in trouble or what looks like trouble, and then he just reemerges with it and finds himself a lot of open ice as he continues to. I think I was reading in the Gazette this week, they're saying he seems to get better every game, and if that continues to go that way, he's going to emerge as a top six forward for us, which will be a real nice find.
Yeah.
When you don't have to draft and the guy shows up for you, that's great.
No kidding. He's got 6 goals and 7 assists in 27 games. Parenteau's got 6 goals and 8 assists in 34 games. One thing I didn't realize was quite this high. Seacatch is hit shooting 20.7%.
Well, that's high.
So that's going to come down, but at the same time, he's only played 27 career games. Like, he's going to add to his game, and he's going to add to his arsenal. And he's only got 29 shots on goal.
Really?
If you look at the other guys on the team, Parenteau's got 67.
I don't think he's a first shoot guy, a shoot first guy, or a first shoot guy.
Neither do I. So, you know, that's a high, unsustainable shooting percentage, and it's going to come down. But again, he's still evolving.
Well, if he can be a 15 to 20 goal guy,
I think his evolution as a player will. What's that?
I say if he can be a 15 to 20 goal guy, I mean that's perfect.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what you want.
And I think his evolution as a player will be enough to offset the regression in his shooting percentage.
Yep, I would agree with that. Parenteau's been quieter as of late, but I don't have any complaints about him.
He'll go through those streaks, though, like most scorers.
Yeah, and I'm not concerned about him. Not to mention, I mean, you've also got the fact that he's lights out in the shootout, which is huge. We just haven't had a shootout in a while.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Question 8. Switching to juniors. Laying it on the line here. Will Canada win gold, which is the only thing that matters, at the World Juniors?
If they're going to do it, if they're going to break this streak, everything is kind of setting up nicely this year.
Uh-huh.
A, they're playing at home. We tend to play well at home. We appear to have the most talented roster, although we appear to have the most talented roster almost every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got Connor McDavid on the roster, which helps a lot as well. And listen, I say this, I'm not, as much as I love the World Juniors, and I really do, like, I really love watching it every holiday season, I'm not the biggest expert on junior hockey in the world.
No.
From what I've, you know, some of the prep work I've done for the tournament and from what I've read, the Americans look scary. The Americans, to me, look like the best team in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably, if I was going to put some shekels on it, I'd probably bet on the Americans.
Yeah, that's who my money would be on as well. But mostly because I also feel weird betting on Canada. Like, Canada's always the assumed favorite, right? So
sure.
you've got to, I think even with all this talk of the Americans being the favorite or who people kind of see as the most likely to emerge, the champions, you got to also remember people are always looking for a reason not to pick Canada because it's very boring to pick Canada.
Right.
I mean, if the Canadian roster is any other roster, you're picking that team. But because it's Canada, you've got to look for a different narrative. You've got to, nobody wants to hear, oh, Canada's probably going to win it, because of course, they're at home, it's hockey, and it's Team Canada. Yes, they're the favorites. So who's second favorite? Let's call them the favorites, because an upset's always possible. And I mean, it won't be a huge upset. The USA is a good team. It's not like we'll be like, man, how'd that American team win? But end of day, Canada's always going to be the deepest.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been, what, 5 years now?
It has been a while. Was the Subban team the last one to win it?
No.
No, there was one after that.
No, there's been one. Give me 2 seconds and I'll find it. I forgot Finland won last year.
I love when Finland wins.
Yeah, last time, oh, you're right. It was the Subban team back in 09 in Ottawa.
Been a while.
Jeez. Yeah.
Subban's been in the NHL a while now.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. 2010, we lost, and that was in Canada. Lost to the States. 2011, we lost to Russia. I remember that game. That was in Buffalo, which is essentially a home game. 2012, it was in Canada. We finished in bronze, and then we finished out of the medals the last 2 years. So the fact that it's in Canada is no guarantee that this team's going to win gold.
Not at all. I mean, yeah, Canada hosts all the time.
So, yeah, it's been a while. This team does tend to go on streaks because it was 5 in a row before that. And before that, there was like a 7-year gap. And before that, we won 6 in a row or something like that.
That's really weird.
It is weird. Maybe this is the beginning of another streak. Maybe we win this year and knock off, you know, 4, 5, 6 in a row. But
5 in a row? What seems less likely to happen? 5 in a row or 6 years without one? Both seem impossible.
Yeah, I mean, even for Canada, 5 in a row is pretty damn impressive.
Well, it's a one-game win, right? It's not best of anything series, so it's easy for a team to sneak in and win it. I'm going 1, 2, 3, USA 1, Canada 2, Finland 3.
Yeah.
Based on, as you say, knowing very little to nothing about junior hockey. Do with that what you will. That's just, that's what the tea leaves look like to me. And by that I mean pretty much regurgitating what I've heard other people say. That's what this whole podcast is. Question number 9, sticking with juniors. How much do you read into Team USA cutting our boy McCarron?
Not a whole lot. I really expected him to be on the team, but the more you follow the World Juniors, the more you realize that a guy getting cut from a team isn't the end of the world.
No.
A lot of good players have been cut from their national teams. And similarly, there have been guys who have looked like friggin' world beaters at the World Juniors, and you get really excited for them, and they don't make the NHL, or they have middling careers. Like, Kyle Chipchura was a phenom for Team Canada.
He just scored last night.
Yeah, I know. He's actually not looking horrible this year.
I was watching that game. Like, I was like, hey.
I had really high expectations for that guy, and a lot of that's because it was inflated by his performance at the World Juniors.
Yeah. Oh, Kyle Chipchura.
So the flip side of that, yeah, you would have liked to see McCarron make the team, but what's that?
Oh, just reminiscing about my excitement. Yeah.
Yeah. You would have liked to see McCarron make the team, but I don't think that's indicative of him being behind the curve or him being a bust or, you know, us having overinflated expectations for him. I think, you know, it's just a pretty good team and he didn't make it.
Yeah, my disappointment about it stems from the fact that I want to watch him play and I won't really see him play otherwise.
Right.
Due to as we said, we don't really watch junior hockey. But I'm not concerned. I don't think this is a huge step back or you know, looking too much into it is a big problem for the Canadians. And he's having a good season in juniors, so it's not as though, you know, he's struggling there and then didn't make the U.S. team, and all of a sudden these are all kind of red flags about the potential of this guy. I just think it's a pretty deep team that the States have, and he didn't make it. Simple as that. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. Move us ahead.
That brings us to number 10. Which rival is more likely to catch the Habs, the Bruins or the Leafs?
This has been something we talk about every week. Pretty much is, when are the Bruins going to reemerge? Continues to not happen. Starting to look very difficult for them to catch Montreal just based on the number of games left. Now, as I said last week, you know, four-game losing streak for Montreal coinciding with a four-game winning streak for the Bruins, and suddenly you've got yourself a hot race again. But Montreal currently, with 34 games played, has 44 points. Bruins have played one last game, 33, and they're 9 points back. So, let's say, it can be a one-point gap as soon as those four-game winning-losing streaks coincide with one another, but there's no guarantee that either of those happen, and this is the first week, so this is probably where the Bruins will break out. But this is the first week where I've started to have some doubt about the Bees, and I watched them play Winnipeg the other day, and they just, and this is with Zdeno and Krejci in the lineup, they just don't look like the Bruins of old right now. There's something off about this team at the moment.
Yeah, I still think they're a better team than Toronto, but I think that gap is almost too big to make up at this point in the season. Like you said, a nice win streak here.
Well, there's still 50 games to play, though.
Yeah, I know, but historically speaking, making up 9 points when you're a third of the way through the season is not easy to do.
You know, the Leafs get their asses handed to them 7-4 by Philly, but this is what the Leafs do. This season, I think this is going to be exactly what these Maple Leafs are. They're going to win some games, people will feel hot about them, and then they'll have a big loss, like the one to Buffalo from, I don't know, a couple months back that set everybody panicking. Then this big, it's always a Saturday night loss that everyone's paying attention to. Sure. One like this, where they go and they lose to a bad team in Philly, and everyone's now wondering, oh, what about the Leafs again? After a hot winning streak, they've struggled a little bit. I don't think that, because of that, I don't think the Leafs will catch the Habs. I mean, they're quite close in the standings, but as we said last week on the podcast, I think Montreal's a much better team than Toronto. And if I'm putting money on which team, I still go with the Bruins as more likely to catch the Habs than the Leafs, which is ridiculous when you look at the point spread.
Yeah, I don't think either of them do it, but I think you can pretty comfortably slot Montreal into the top three in the division. I have a hard time seeing either of those teams surpassing them, but Toronto, just based on the math, I think has a better chance, even though they're not a great hockey team.
Well, that's why I was so happy with the Saturday night win by the Habs, because it's a team that, while it has had a few kind of down points in the season, they've had their struggles. More often than not, they will reemerge with a win and a convincing win against the Sens in a game they should have won on Saturday night. And I like those games when you're like, okay, this is one they need to make sure that things don't go, you know, start to get off the rails again. And also, they're better than this team. And they went out and they beat the Sens 4-1 after a tough one to the Ducks. It's one of those wins that gives me confidence that the Canadians can continue to play in the standings exactly where they are right now. Continue to be kind of near the top, at least towards the middle, and in no real danger of falling out of the playoff picture.
Yep. Saturday night game against a division rival, and yes, it's a team that was playing their third game in 4 nights, but, you know, a team that's decent, if nothing else. They're not a complete pushover, and yeah, you need to, good teams need to just sort of file those 2 points away, which is what Montreal did.
Yeah, that's a well said. It was one of those games where you got to file those 2 points away, get them, don't look back, move forward. As you say, 3 games in 4 nights, you have to beat Ottawa in that situation.
Yeah,
and they did.
You really do.
They did in what wasn't convincing fashion until it was very convincing fashion.
Yeah, well, score aside, it was like you're right. You know, 2-1 game didn't seem all that convincing, but they were.
And the one for Ottawa was, let's face it.
Yeah, and that was a slanted ice game. Like, Montreal was really pretty much in control of that entire game, I would say.
Very much so. Sticking with the Bruins for number 11, are you scared if the Bruins add TJ Oshie?
I mean, he's a nice player. It helps.
What helps?
I don't know if he's the missing piece that gets them back into the conversation of Stanley Cup contender.
Well, because they also have to give up something, right?
Yeah, presumably, yeah.
Because they're just so hard against the cap, they can't just move. They can't just move draft picks or anything for them.
No, that's true. And more than, and I've said this 1,000 times, but more than anything else, if the Bruins are going to come back to being the Bruins, everything they do revolves around Chara getting back to 100%.
Which he's not right now. If you watch, he is definitely not right now. And maybe this is, you know, maybe this is the beginning of the decline for Big Z, and he doesn't get back to that, but we'll find out. Or maybe he's coasting a little to the playoffs after realizing he didn't have much left for them last year.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Oshie's a nice player. I think his, his status was raised a little bit by what he did in Sochi. I don't think he's, you know, quite as great a player as maybe the casual fan thinks he is, but I think he's a really nice player.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, you know, as much as this is
overstated. I would gladly take him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I. And he is a Bruins type player, as much as that can be overstated. So yeah, it'd be a nice addition for them. But like you said, it depends what they have to give up. And again, more than anything, I think Chara is a bigger addition to the team than even Oshie would be.
They're definitely going to do something, the Bruins. They've been in too many rumors. They're making a lot of phone calls. They're not feeling comfortable, nor should they. They're in 10th place right now.
No, exactly. And they know that, you know, I'm not an advocate of artificially propping open a window that's closing, but, you know.
Well, they could still win the cup this year.
They could still win the cup, but they know that, you know, that window is closing soon, you would think. And they're a smart enough franchise that maybe they can do some things to reopen it, but...
I think they will.
I think they will, too. I don't think this is a franchise that's about to go into a tailspin, but, you know, they know that, yeah, they can win the cup this year, but they probably have to make some changes.
Yeah, the team as is, I don't believe, can win the cup this year. They seem to be missing something. And maybe it's, you know, the big losses in Boychuk and just the injuries and aging. They're not the team they were last season, the season before that. And we'll see what they can add to it. And I don't think it takes a lot of pieces to get them back because, you know, Boychuk, good player, but obviously not the, you know, your difference maker to the scale that we're seeing a difference between this year's Bruins and Bruins of the last few seasons. I imagine... If I was a Bruins fan, I'd have faith in the brain trust over there to turn this around for them. And like,
I would too.
For the same reason, I pick them more likely to catch the Habs than the Leafs. I will not count out the Bruins. I think there's enough there, and I think they're a pretty smart management group that's probably going to fleece some team, get a good return, and suddenly we'll be scared of the Bees again.
I mean, we talked about it last week, but... I mean, as much as I just talked about the window closing, if they go out and get Taylor Hall, that window's right back open again.
Yep. The cap is the only thing that fucks with them a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
They are in a tough spot there. So they can't make any trade they want simply because everything has to be done with the cap in mind. But they're not stupid in Boston. They've made, for the most part, good trades other than the... who'd they just trade? Finally, question number 12, switching sports entirely. Just for this one, bear with us, folks. It's a teaser for what could be coming. How long before we start an Expos podcast, Sean?
The Rays are in a bit of trouble, eh?
The Rays aren't in a bit of trouble. The Tampa Bay Rays are done as a franchise.
You think?
It's everything I've read says this is the end of the Rays. Like, this was their only opportunity to stay. This is a franchise that's moving somewhere. And the leading contender in the somewhere right now is clearly Montreal. I hope they don't go out and do what Montreal did and empty their farm system. Because that's a jerk thing to do before you move.
It is. I still think we're a long ways off. And I still think there's a pretty long... institutional memory in MLB headquarters of, you know, 6,000 fans at the Big O and having to play, but playing 20 games a year in Puerto Rico. And, you know, it's been the feasibility of Montreal as a baseball market, it's been a remarkable turnaround in 10 years. Had you told me, in 2004, I thought there'd be no chance we would ever see.
We're literally 10 years later here, and it seems like they might come back.
Yeah, and in 2004, I thought there was no chance, and if there was any chance, it was 50 years down the road. It is a discussion now, and it's not just a discussion amongst Montreal baseball diehards. Like, it's a discussion that they're having on ESPN and in baseball headquarters. But I still think we're a ways off.
I'm going to disagree with you on this. I think it's happening.
God, that would be incredible.
The main people you need to be in talks with Major League Baseball in Tampa Bay right now are the people with the money. And that's been happening.
Yep.
And it's the legacy people and it's Bell. And Bell needs the Expos. Well, needs. I mean, they take $400 from each of us every month, but they need some product to put on all those channels.
They do. Yeah,
they
do.
They've got, you know, losing hockey was huge for them. And not only was it huge for them, but they now have that money left over. I mean, that's billions of dollars that they had in their budget spent on hockey. And, you know, they didn't get to spend it on hockey because they don't have hockey now. They need some product, and the Expos would fit in there perfectly for them. I think it's going to happen. I think everything's aligned perfectly. The falling Canadian dollar a little bit maybe hurts, but not enough. You know, if it's not down to the 60 cents on the American dollar that it was when the Expos were really struggling.
Right.
The writing's on the wall for Tampa Bay quite clearly now. It's just a matter of where they go, it seems. And I don't know where else you're taking a team. Have you heard rumors of anywhere else?
I've heard San Antonio. I've heard
Texas doesn't need another baseball team. They've got three.
San Antonio. There's a few of those other sort of mid-sized markets. I can't remember if Louisville was one or Salt Lake City. A couple places have thrown their name in the mix.
I'd like it in Montreal is all I'm saying. And there will be an Expos podcast.
I know you would, buddy. Yes, they will. Absolutely, they will.
So we don't know how long before we start, but the moment it even seems like it's likely, there will be an Expos podcast with Sean and I. So if you enjoy baseball and you enjoy us talking about sports, which I hope you do if you're listening to this, otherwise why are you putting yourself through that? It'll be a matter of time between the announcement of the return of the Expos and this becoming a baseball podcast in the summer. It'll be fun.
That would be fantastic.
So a question about the future Expos. Are you happy with the Will Myers trade? I'm watching them now. I'm very interested in the Rays now, though. I will admit that.
Yeah. No,
I'm looking at
enough.
What they're doing. I'm reading that they're restockpiling their minor league system to kind of do what they did 10 years ago, which, God, that's a perfect team to inherit if it's a team that just has a bunch of young talent coming up. And it'll be, you know, it'll be in honor of all the things the Expos always did before, which was get them while they're young because you won't keep them.
Yeah, the market, baseball is so much more conducive to a small market being able to succeed now than it was when the Expos.
Oh my God, it's so, you know, different.
I mean, it's not even comparable, really. But that is another thing that, you know, Montreal has in its favor is it's, you know, the playing field's a lot more balanced than it was 15 years ago.
All right, that's enough of that. We won't put the people through any more baseball talk.
I suppose.
Oh, but it's fun to do. That's all I've got to say. So let's take a look at the schedule ahead for the Canadians, rounding out the year that is 2014. We've got the high-flying New York Islanders, who got like 48 shots off the other night.
Oh, I know. They're legit.
Oh, they're super legit. Super legit. That's on the 23rd, 7 o'clock in Long Island. That's where you always want to be on New Year's Eve, Eve. And then after Christmas, a little bit of a break there from the 24th to the 28th, but they're back in action with back-to-back games on the 29th and 30th on the road in Carolina and in Florida. And then we'll probably podcast somewhere in there before the new year.
Indeed.
And we kind of talked about that stretch on the podcast earlier this week, but not a real gauntlet, but also not a gimme. I mean, Florida and Carolina aren't great, but you want to win that game against the Islanders.
Yeah, and Florida's frisky, and the Islanders are, like we said, the Islanders are one of the four best teams in the East. So,
yep, no doubt about it. I mean, they're playing legit hockey. They're not being buoyed by anything. They're just a good hockey team. I was right about them. I was very wrong about the Flyers, though.
Well,
hey, if Voracek and Giroux had any support staff, then I'd look like I know what I was talking about.
Fair enough.
Top two point getters in the NHL right now on the same team, and it's not even in the playoffs.
Yeah, I know.
How the hell does that happen?
No blue line, and actually Steve Mason, as much as I shit on him, he hasn't been horrible. I think it's just a complete lack of depth, and there's nothing on defense.
I think they've got two players, essentially.
Yeah.
Two very good players.
one very good player and one guy who's having a hell of a career season that I'm still kind of expecting Voracek to come, not crashing down to earth, but he's a nice player. I don't know if he's one of the five best players in the NHL.
This season's Alex Steen?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly who he is. That's, yeah, perfect comparison.
Thank you. I thought it was perfect.
You're welcome.
All right, let's get bold. What is your bold fucking prediction this week?
That Carolina game has trap game written all over it to
me.
Yes, it does. Especially, you know, they're coming off a kind of a win over Carolina, but, you know, a game that wasn't as close as the final score would indicate. That was closer than the final score would indicate. Team's playing well, nice little win streak, but yeah, those games around Christmas and New Year's, weird things always happen.
Oh yeah, you never gamble on those games, would be my advice.
You know, coming off a tough, presumably a tough game against the Islanders, looking ahead to the New Year, it's a Monday night, two nights before New Year's Eve in Carolina, and there's going to be 3,000 fans in the building. I think it's going to be one of those dreadfully boring 2-1 losses that are kind of hard to explain.
When was the last time the Habs had an entertaining game against Carolina?
Yeah, I know. Boring. 06 playoffs.
Yeah, well, I was there. It was rough. Was that the ones I was at? I was at some Carolina playoffs. No, it was further back than 06.
It was 02, yeah. I was there with you, buddy.
Theo was on the team, and you were getting a beer when the game-winning goal went in.
Not my first of the night.
Certainly not your first of the night. We were shirtless at those games, right?
Sure were.
Good stuff. You're welcome, ladies. Ladies of 02. That's what I'm naming this podcast. The ladies of 02. All right. Not so bold, though, I got to say.
No, I know.
Okay, as long as you know. I just want you to know that that wasn't very bold. Mine is seeing this first line play right now with Chucky at center, Galley and Patches on the wings, and they look legit. I'm going with Gallagher and Galchenyuk both finishing the 2014-2015 campaign with 20-plus goals.
Nice. Very nice. They're on pace.
They are on pace, and...
I think they're on pace.
They're off pace a little bit, but we'll call it on pace.
All right.
It's close enough. I think they're looking at, like, 17-18 right now, but... You know, Galchenyuk's got 4 goals in his last 3 games. He's suddenly coming on, and just the passing precision. And Pacioretty looking to pass a lot more these days. Not with Dejonle, so he's got 2 guys who can shoot, who can do a lot with the puck, and can return it to him. That line, well, that's a real first line at the moment, I think.
Oh yeah, that, absolutely.
I mean, Galchenyuk's got to come into his own as a center before it's, you know, one of those top lines. It's funny, we always talk about first lines as if they all have to be these elite. Most, you know, only about 5 teams ever have a real first line by our definition. You know, maybe 8.
Sure.
But if that shapes up, that's a pretty legit first line.
Oh yeah, yeah, they look really good. That Gallagher goal last night was gorgeous.
Oh man, whew, that was pretty. That was just perfect. It was just perfect passing. And anytime those three, you know, there's no weakness in there now. Anytime those three are coming down at you, bearing down, that's scary for the opposition. They can all do a lot with the puck.
Yeah, exactly.
Gallagher is also kind of playing, he doesn't have to get in the dirty zone as much. I mean, he doesn't have to.
I mean, he's still good at it, so I like to see him do it. No, but yeah, you're right.
But, you know, that's not where all his goals are coming in the last few games. He's on this line, he's going to be able to just get some pretty passes in, on the perimeter a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's true.
They're fun to watch is the point. And I think they're all going to get, so 30-plus for Max Pack and 20-plus for the other two.
That's not bad.
It ain't bad. There's a worry. I was just looking at with Voracek and Giroux at the top. I was looking at the top scorers in the league. You all concerned that there's not a single Hab in the top 20 scoring in the NHL right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would agree with that.
I think we all know who Pacioretty is, and he's, you know, regardless of what the standings are, he's our number one offensive threat. But as nice as depth is, you need that guy who can put the team on his back for a stretch and, you know, say, I'm not losing this game. I'm gonna score 4 goals over the next 3. If no one else is putting the puck in the back of the net, I will.
Yeah, Patches hasn't had the watch out, here I come moment really this season.
No, it's usually been maybe his most consistent season.
Yep.
But yeah, he hasn't had that tear that he has. And maybe it's coming, maybe it's not. Maybe this is the year where he, you know, settles in, for lack of a better word. But no, I think if you want to be considered an elite team, you need that elite offensive threat.
It may be coming, forming at center right now on the top line.
Yeah, it might be.
I mean, the hat trick was nice, but what he's done the last two games is almost nicer because it's he's continued along that theme and making that first line killer at the moment.
Yeah, it really is impressive.
So from that, we shift gears into your Marchand of the week. Who pissed you off these last couple days?
It's 4 days before Christmas. I got nothing.
Got
good,
nothing?
Goodwill towards all men.
Not me.
Is that even the phrase?
Not really. I think it's just goodwill towards men. You had it all. It's all right.
No, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's been a relatively quick turnaround from the last podcast, and we won the game. So I'll go with the Ducks. I'll go with those dirty-ass Ducks that we talked about earlier.
Dirty-ass Ducks. I'm going to go with the few people who can't let bygones be bygones and are forgetting about what he really did for the team historically and booed Bob Gainey's name on Thursday night. Firstly, don't boo during Koivu's speech, assholes. No matter who he's talking about. I mean, unless he'd mentioned someone truly horrible, which would be weird. But Bob Gainey, I mean, one of the greatest players to ever play for the Habs.
I know.
And yeah, he wasn't the best GM. And almost, you know, okay, if the trade had gone through with Tampa Bay, that would have lost us all our good players and brought back Vinny LeCavalier, the corpse of Vinny LeCavalier at this point. Then maybe, yeah. So, but the trade didn't happen. Our team's good. Leave Bob Gainey alone. He was a great player.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, you wonder why some people are hesitant to take that job or the head coaching job. Like, that's why.
Yeah, you can, apparently, with some portion of the fan base, you can erase a Hall of Fame career by not being a fantastic GM to the point they'll boo you during an honoring speech by a man being honored, you know, for all his years as leadership and one of the great highlights of the past 20 years of this team in Saku Koivu. Middle of his speech, he mentions Bob Gainey thanking him, and some assholes still feel the need to boo.
Yeah, no, I know. No, that's a good one.
Yeah, they're jerks. Also, the refs against the Ducks. Even, and I'll go both ways on this, because I just thought the refs let that game play. They inserted themselves way too much in the game. Even, you know, some of the calls they made against Montreal, but some of the calls they made against Anaheim as well. I was just getting pissed off. I thought it was a game that could have been better had the refs been better. Even if Montreal had lost, I didn't like the reffing in that one at all. But you're right. It's Christmas, the holiday season. Let's get back
goodwill
into the
towards
positive.
All men.
Yeah, goodwill towards all men, all the time, as the saying goes. Let's get into you got a highlight of the week or three stars here?
I have a highlight of the week, and it is the aforementioned Brendan Gallagher goal.
Yeah.
Which not only was it a beauty, but as you kind of alluded to, that's sort of like, you know, when you close your eyes and you think of what that line could do for the next three seasons, four seasons, five seasons, it's those type of plays. Yep. 15 times a year.
And you haven't seen a lot of that in Montreal, to be honest.
No.
Not the, you see a lot of that in Toronto. It's a team with great passing that can find the back of the net and do some things that will really help the advanced stats, I think. And you just got guys who can connect on those types of goals. Those are pure goal scoring line goals. And
yeah, I mean the team we scored that goal against, that Ottawa line. Back in the day when it was Spezza and Alfredson and Healy is, you know, just in my life, like, that was the best line I've ever seen go up against the Habs, or at least in the last 10, 12 years.
I would agree with that.
And that one goal, at least, was kind of reminiscent of it. And yes, Galchenyuk still has room for growth as a player. Maybe Gallagher does as well. Who knows what happens, but that could be a legitimate, really damn good top line for the next stretch.
It's fun to watch, and highlights like that are a big part of the reason why. I went with three stars. This one's maybe a stretch to tie into a hockey podcast, but I'll find a way. I'm giving the third star to Stephen Colbert and Craig Ferguson, going off the air one night after another, both doing a very good job with it. And here's how I'll tie it into hockey. And Marty Broder, I hope you're listening. It's nice to see guys go out on top and go out, you know, not fading away, but going out strong and knowing when it might be the time. I mean, not that Colbert's going anywhere. He's taking over Letterman's job, but putting a cap on the Colbert Report, Ferguson going to host a game show because it's much easier to do. He's got kids. It makes sense. And both of them went out in awesome fashion, I think. And, you know, at the right time, we didn't feel like they'd faded at all. And it's nice to see in anything from sports to entertainment to, you know, late night talk shows like that. That's my hockey tie-in with those two.
All right.
Mostly I just wanted to talk about how much I enjoyed those programs. Yeah, number two, Voracek, who you don't believe in, but holy shit, he's fun to watch right now.
He is, yeah.
And the first star, Saku Koivu, who continued to be the class act that he is, even though I said I'd retire the word class. The blank act that he is. Nice speech. Great public speaker, too. I was very impressed with that. And that's it. They're my three stars.
Alrighty.
Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll see you before
2015.
Pick out some of our highlights of 2014. Do some reminiscing. Some more games in there. Thanks a lot for listening. He's at the O'Neill Factor on the Twitter. I'm at Zach Vanoss. That's with a CH and two S's. And at the Montreal Bias. That's the website where you can find all that. If you don't know about that and are somehow listening to this podcast, I don't know how that happened, but good for you. See you soon. Enjoy your merriment.